You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes after 10, if you've seen Ingleba wound, you are one of the last people to have done so, pending how a court case will now go that is challenging the reclassification of it. It has, through the appeals tribunal, been reclassified as X18, which means there's limited distribution at certain places that are licensed, like the equivalent of an adult world, for example. And the question is that really, in law, an accurate classification? We had, in fact, invited the Film and Publications Board. They confirmed the interview with us 2 days ago, and then in the last minute they pulled out, claiming that the CEO has to urgently see the communications minister this morning. And when my brilliant team phoned the communications department, they in fact confirmed with us that there was no meeting. So quite frankly, they ran for the hills, and that is disappointing from you, Sandile Nene. If you are deeply ashamed and embarrassed for lying to us, why don't you just call in anyway, and you can be part of this conversation as well. But the one person who never runs away from important conversations, whether it be about our public broadcaster, whether it be about arts, race, everything else about the intersectional injustices in this country, is of course Sikwetlane Phamori, who is many things, including a freedom of expression activist. Thank you for coming in and coming into the studio as well.
Thanks so much for having me, Eusebius.
Now, the conversation I'd rather we have, we're now going to have inadvertently, as I said to you, in the second half of the hour. And for those people who have seen the film, if you haven't seen the film, spoiler alert, we're actually going to talk about the film on its own merits as a work of art, because that is what it is, in the second half of the hour, and we can have great fun. I, for example, want to box with other people about whether the ending was weird, convincing, awesome, not so awesome. We're going to have that in the middle hour. But let's get to the order of business for the first half an hour, which is this classification. As far as I know, and the lawyers seem to be of a similar view, the ones that are challenging this reclassification, Sikwetlane, it is only hardcore porn that gets classified X18.
Yes. Just maybe to give you a bit of background around how classifications happen in this country, because I think that this is a crucial thing for how we understand our public institutions to work for us, firstly, and then secondly, how within the scope of regulation around what we can publish and exhibit, how we manage the issues of freedom of expression, of representation and representativity and so forth. So the first thing is that the Film and Publications Board effectively has two bodies that operate within it. You have the classifications body, or the classifications committee, which does the day-to-day work of viewing films or looking at publications before they are published, and then once they've reviewed them, they provide against the guidelines that are provided for within the Act's regulations as to how one goes about making an informed evaluation of the substance, which is generally a subjective thing that one does, how one does that within the parameters of the law, so that everyone can reliably know what to expect from the classifications body. Again, enabling freedom of expression while also ensuring that people are informed of what is in the content, so they can decide whether they want to view it or not. Then you have the appeals tribunal. So once the classifications body, or the classifications committee, has made a decision, usually it's a decision made by three classifiers, including a chief classifier, and then they make a decision. Ideally, they need to be unanimous, and most of them are. The FPB really does go out of its way to do its work properly in this regard. And where there is a dispute, maybe a dissenting opinion, it may then be handed over to the appeals tribunal. That's the first instance at which the tribunal comes into play. Now, the tribunal is an adjudication body that is tasked with, you know, overseeing the work of the classifications committee. We can't take these things to court on a day-to-day basis because, firstly, it's prohibitively expensive to appeal to the courts, but also because of the sheer volumes of content that the FPB has to work through in order to make its evaluations and classifications to inform us. So the tribunal then comes into play to say, well, we are sufficiently informed and sufficiently empowered people being appointed by the Minister of Communications for this particular function. We understand the law and the FPP Act well enough to be able to make informed and lawful decisions or provide informed and lawful guidance to the Classifications Committee so that people can again make informed decisions about what content they wish to view or not. Not to suppress or ban or censor content. Long gone are the days of a censorship board, and for a good reason.
Isn't part of the problem that when they then perform the roles that you've just described, there's a certain amount of subjectivity, and I often wonder how it comes in. I have a very good friend of mine, I shall not name him without permission, who is an author who is does some of the classification, and he has regaled me with the most fascinating stories of how they go about how many nude scenes were there, was the penis erect, was it flaccid in this particular scene, and he almost does it on a volunteer basis. You know, it's almost like donating a bit of sperm and you get some pocket money as a student for the weekend. But actually, given the seriousness of the aesthetic judgment that you are making and also the economic judgment, because whether you classify a Leon Schuster film as all ages or 16 will make a massive difference to how much money the filmmaker will recoup for the investment in that product. So a lot hangs on the subjective judgment calls being made by the men and women on these tribunals. What are their qualifying criteria for doing so?
So to a certain degree, yes, it does depend on a subjective evaluation of the content. But again, like I said a little earlier, and perhaps we should develop this or flesh it out a little further, is that the FPB Act, which is the guiding statute for how the FPB and its tribunal operate, has attached to it regulations which provide for the guidelines that classifiers and the tribunal are required to follow as they make their assessments because of the subjective nature of the decision. So we are well aware that we live in a fairly conservative society, for better or for worse. That's just what we are in. And our conservative society has demonstrated itself not to be ready for certain kinds of conversations or representations being made in the public domain. Sex and sexuality is a big part of the contestation around our morality as a society.
Yeah.
Now, of course there are going to be classifiers who subscribe to a more conservative view around how, what the treatment of sexuality, sex and sexuality should be within the public domain. But again, they are guided by the guidelines, the classification guidelines. The classification guidelines provide for very specific things. And perhaps it's useful for us to look at the Engleba case as a way of really unpacking this.
So yeah, if we cut to the chase, they're going to run into trouble. In fact, Sikutlani and I was talking about this, and I understood this. Someone is saying on Twitter, Eusebius Anonymous, your tweet is visible, dude or woman or gender non-confirming person, but they say anonymous, please. The thing is that the FPB had rated it as 16 through the Classifications Committee. The Appeals Tribunal took it up to X18, much to the FPP's horror. And the thing is, they're not allowed to publicly contradict the tribunal. I'm sure that's why they ran for the this morning, because I was going to center the legal question of the reclassification. But let's get to the guidelines for X18. There must be explicit sexual scenes. They must be the dominant part of the content of the film. And when one looks at hardcore porn that is classified as X18, there's no complicated narrative arc. There are not interesting themes and sub-themes in a plot that is developed in a myriad of ways. We come to porn as consumers of porn, those of us who consume porn, wanting to be aroused. And the people who make pornographic films, they aim at arousing us when we view it. What you have in Inglaba is, at best, implied gay sex. It's not explicit, so the first criterion is not met. But over and above that, even if you have an overactive imagination and you are misrecalling the three scenes where there's sexual activity that is implied and you remember that as explicit, it is not the dominant part of the narrative. It constitutes a couple of minutes of a feature-length film. So how on earth legally will this be getting over the hurdle for an X18 classification?
I mean, this is precisely the issue at the table here. These are the substantive. This is about the substantive issues regarding the case and the considerations that might be made around whether to reclassify from 16 to 18 or even X18. And I think that we also need to go back to quite a seminal case or judgment in how we deal with the classification of content, and particularly the classification of X-rated content or unclassifiable content. And this is often unlawful content like child sexual abuse material.
Yeah.
This is what people typically call child pornography. But I think that it's really unhelpful to use that kind of terminology, because pornography is something that happens between consenting adults, and where a child is concerned, this is not the case. So the case of the judgment I'm referring to is the Dirk judgment, which really goes right through the whole gamut of how we might be able to identify child abuse material, so that we may be able to not classify it and apprehend and prosecute the people who are distributing or exhibiting it, and then how we go about, you know, the various stages of classifying content beneath that. That's X-rated content, like the pornographic content that you're speaking about, where, you know, I do need to say that, you know, in addition to all of the things that you've suggested, there also needs to be, you know, by saying explicit, the explicit or, you know, visuals of an erect penis in flagrante, as it were, doing its business. So it's not enough that it's just merely, you know, it could be implied to be explicit. It needs to be explicit. One does need to see this erect penis. And even then, it is not enough to have only those conditions met in order to have an X18 rating. You then have to go into the artistic value and merits. And this is the thing that you've raised, Eusebius, which is around, well, you know, what are the dominant themes?
Yes.
Now, I can tell you that Ingleba only has no more than 3 minutes in the entirety of its about 80-something minutes of screen time of sexual content, or even implied sexual content.
Absolutely. If anything, it fails as a porn film.
Yes, indeed. And unfortunately, the appeals tribunal went ahead without any of those conditions. In my view, and in the view of the filmmakers, as is reflected on the face of their founding affidavit and the appeal of the decision with the Pretoria High Court. You know, they find that actually what's going on here is that the FPB has gone out of its way to find a reason to classify this as an X18 without complying with any of the requirements that are stated in the Act.
Now, what they also do, besides failing to justify on the basis of explicit sexual visuals that dominate the film and aim at arousal to meet the criteria of being X-rated, Sikotlane. They also then give us a couple of other bad reasons, as if one line of bad reasoning is not good enough. They choose to throw at us other bad reasons. And you will remember there's a part of their reasoning where they say there are certain themes in the film, and I can't believe I'm actually even going to repeat the nonsense that they have said in their justification, that could, quote-unquote, cause tension in society. Let's talk a little bit through that. So, for example, they say that women might be offended. It's not quite clear on what basis. Women hardly make a cameo appearance, unless, of course, the appeal tribunal is so woke that they're really annoyed that women are rendered invisible in the film, which would be a lovely critique, but that should happen on the pages of The Star, not in the form of banning it. And then the other thing is the anal sex. They actually mention it. And I thought to myself, you know what? The only thing that's really pornographic here, pardon the pun, is that effectively what they're saying, and I don't know if this is a unkind reading, you're far more generous than me about these guys' reasoning. Really what they're saying is that homosexual sex per se is pornographic. That's how I read it. Why does the portrayal, even the implied portrayal of anal sex, I mean, how on earth does that cause tension?
I think a more generous framing of that statement might be that the association of same-sex sexual conduct between men with the cultural institution of Ulwaluko and perhaps even the religious institution of Christianity is what is reprehensible. I think that is a far more generous and a bit more nuanced reading of what may be being asserted.
But then they give credence to my ungenerous reading, because 3-4 sentences later they say, and this is a verbatim quote, it's stuck in my head, children learn by imitating.
No, absolutely.
Heaven forbid if kids should be doing things that Eusebius might do privately.
You know, I think, again, we need to remind ourselves of what governs us as a people, as a society, as a nation. What governs us is our constitution and the framework it sets up for us, as well as its enabling legislation. That is in order to give us, firstly, our right to just administrative action, which is, you know, a constitutional right that is little discussed in the public domain, because it's usually mobilized by, you know, the tenderpreneurs ranging from, you know, massive corporations that are in charge of the disbursements of massive funds to a huge number of people in this country, right through to your petty tenderpreneurs, if you want to call them that.
Yeah.
But actually, this right is a thoroughgoing thing for what we should be expecting as a people, for how we are governed, and having a reliable and predictable legal system, in effect, the rule of law in action.
Absolutely.
Now, within that, we have the Film and Publications Boards Act. It's enabling and directing legislation. And that legislation is very clear around what the appeals tribunal, as well as the FPB in its initial classifications function, must concern itself with and what it needn't concern itself with.
Okay, let's hit the pause button there, because it raises a question, and this is also where in our critical engagement with the appeals tribunal, we mustn't make their mistake of simply stipulating a viewpoint without cashing it out and justifying it. A key part of the finding, actually to your point, Mava, exactly, is that there's a sentence that says, this film has got no scientific, educational, and artistic merit. That raises the obvious meta question. How do you determine what is artistic merit? How do you determine educational value? How do you determine scientific value of a work of art? And I'm going to put that question to Sikwe Tlane. We'll take a break there. But I also want to ask you a question. Let's say, for argument's sake, I don't know, your surname is Bala. You were offended by the film. Are you capable of distinguishing, or are you too emotional to distinguish between, I am offended by the film, but I recognize that the reclassification is wrong in law? Are you even capable of holding those thoughts, or are your emotional responses to this work making it very difficult for you to participate in this very different conversation? Because remember, today we're not talking about whether it is right to have a story that is situated in the Eastern Cape where you have this sacred ritual taking place. We're asking a very different question. And I'm very keen, those of you who called in and told me why you don't like the film, are you capable of suspending that thought and having a discussion that is more sober about the classification per se? Because these are two different issues, and I think we are also conflating them. How do we determine artistic value? Is it just, I think there is, you think there's not? Particularly for purpose of the law, right? Mm-hmm. Because the lawyers would have to fight about this thing. The appeals tribunal say, we find no artistic merit, no educational value. Mm-hmm. How do we proceed to evaluate the fairness of that judgment?
I think that as a fairly well-informed layperson, my understanding of the Constitution and how it frames the right to freedom of expression, and therefore frames how we make these determinations of artistic value in law, which is a very different thing to, making a determination of artistic value just in the social fabric of things as people in general. But in law, because we must remember that law is there to regulate us. It is the power of the state to regulate our behaviors for the benefit of the majority of the people, at least for the benefit of society in general. It needs to actively acknowledge the things that need regulation while also taking a light touch approach. Now, where this question of determining whether something has artistic, educational, and scientific merit in law is not a positive determination, by which I mean there are no positive criteria by which we can say, if I tick X, Y, Z box, then we can say the thing has artistic merit. Actually, it's the opposite. And this is in order to give rise to the constitutional provision protecting and elaborating our right to freedom of expression, which extends to artistic expression, educational expression, as well as academic, including scientific expression, investigation, study, and pursuit. So we need to understand where this comes from. Now, the next step that is taken is when something that looks in terms of the classification guidelines, like an X-ratable piece of content, then the obligation on the part of the classifiers, in the case of Inglaba, it would then also be an obligation on the appeals tribunal to seek to read into that content any kind of artistic merit or value in order to be able to temper its power and give the content the benefit of the doubt around whether it can be widely distributed and seen under as much as an 18 rating, which means that only adults can access the content, but it is verily and readily accessible in cinemas, etc.
Okay, let's hold that thought, because I want to come back to how high or low a burden that is that falls on a film in order to meet that particular criterion. And I suspect it's far lower than the appeals tribunal thinks. If it was a very high burden, we couldn't be watching Leon Schuster films every summer. Okay, so if you've just tuned in, we're talking about Inglaba the Wound's reclassification as X18. The practical effect of that is banning. And the question is that a fair reclassification? It's now being challenged in the courts, and we are discussing that with Sikwetlane Phamodi, who's a freedom of expression activist. We had invited the Film Publication Board, and this morning they lied to us about why they can't be part of this discussion. There's a really interesting philosophical question around what counts as art, what counts as good art. It's in relation to this film, something I reflect on in my column this week in the Mail and Guardian, and it seems to me as if the appeals tribunal are conflating those two questions, Sikwetlane. I've struggled to convince many of my cousins, after becoming the first coconut in the family, to listen to really weird groups like Red Hot Chili Peppers, classical music that I took in high school, and then try and playing it at home, and my Oma would be, please, that's noise, don't play it. In turn, I'm a Philistine when it comes to jazz, certain kinds of classical music, German Lieder, I just don't get. But I don't regard it as noise. And it seems to me that there's low levels of artistic literacy on the part of the appeals tribunal. They can't separate the question, how do I respond aesthetically to the film, from the question, what is the proper classification in law? Because, and treaties have been written on the works of someone like Leon Schuster. I wasn't just taking the mickey out of him there for the hell of it. There are racist tropes in his work. We don't think that because of that, it should not be shown in New Metro and Stir Konica and other places where people might be able to access the work. So when we talk about artistic merit, how important is it to not conflate that requirement in law with the question of good artistic merit?
You know, I think it's, I think it's a very difficult question to answer directly this, because again, it's entirely subjective, which is why the rules exist. Mm. The rules exist not only to regulate our behaviors as a people, but also to affirm and protect our rights as a people so that we know what to expect when a matter comes up for adjudication, so that we can feel that we've had every opportunity to be heard, to argue our case, to have it duly considered, so that when a judgment is made or a value judgment is made, which is by and large what seems to have happened in this case, that then we can always go back to the reasons and know that the law was applied both in terms of its letter as well as its spirit, so that all in the future can know what to expect in the application of the rules. This is what the rule of law is. And the rule of law, at least the law as it stands and the FPB Act as it stands, does not seek to suppress. It does not seek to make a moral judgment. It does not seek to even make a value judgment on the expression as to whether it is artistic or not. Rather, it says there are basic minimum standards as far as how we as a society expect content to be classified so that people can make a judgment on their own part as to whether to access it or not. That is what the FPB Act does. And we really do need to be fair here. To the extent that the Classifications Committee made the initial determination last year already in July, they followed the rules because their reasoning complies with the rules.
Yeah.
The question as to whether that application of the rules at that instance, never mind at this point where we now have an X18 rating that goes out of its way to suppress this film in many respects from being viewed, is backed up in law, and we can test out the application in a court, but that hadn't been done by the filmmakers at that stage. They, for whatever reasons, abided by the classification decision of the initial committee, and they went through with it. It would only then be close to 6 months after, in fact, more than 6 months after the classification decision, was published, that an appeal was raised, which when we look at the Act again in terms of what the procedure the FPB Appeals Tribunal is required to follow in this instance, it is very plain in this regard. It says you have 30 days from the moment you are notified of a classification to make an appeal. And even then, it limits the people who may make this appeal. It's not just anybody. It's a very specific list of people who may make this complaint to the Appeals Tribunal for a reclassification to be considered and not be made a fait accompli.
Absolutely. Look, there are also very informal indicators of whether or not a film deserves a rating of X18. Now, this is not a necessary way of testing the classification for its rationality, but I think it is at least indicative. This film has won something like at least 20 awards internationally. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sikwetlani, but I do not recall any of the awards that it got being at porn film festivals.
No, absolutely not.
And the reason why I'm saying it's obviously, you know, it's not an override. It's one of the contributory factors that the lawyers mention in the papers. But it's also fair because if we have debates about what counts as art, one of the things we look at is, okay, I don't know, all of the hell that just got sold for R1 million. But Eusebius's work is in the habit of being displayed in certain fora and institutions that society deemed to be institutions that are markers of where you find things that we call artworks.
Exactly.
Right? Now, the same goes for the international film circuit. So it is not an irrelevant factor, is it?
No. It's not an irrelevant factor at all. And I mean, I want us to go back to something I raised a little earlier around the classifiers, or at least the appeals tribunal in this case, having to read into the content the possibility of this having artistic merit. And these are the kinds of things that one would have
Absolutely.
To consider.
That's a very good point.
Is it reasonable to expect an ordinary, reasonable person to suspect that this might be art? What might be the indicator?
Yeah.
Has it received awards? Well, then, we don't want to encroach on the right to freedom of expression. Our job is to classify, inform, 100%. So the user may decide.
And there are many analogies that are useful, and I really think we must... I think this is a beautiful and rich discussion because you have a very fine mind. But I think it's also important that we, in between doing that, also just call BS on things that are plain speaking. And let's take a controversial example from another art genre, writing of books and books. There are many South Africans who are pissed off with James Coetzee for Disgrace. Now, the question becomes, do you ban Disgrace because none of the black characters are cool? Or do you reserve your critique of the flat black characters for a first-class pass honors essay? You know what I mean? So it seems to me here that this is where the conflation comes in. Mm-hmm. It's okay to not like the film. I've seen some brilliant lesbian filmmakers who are black and artists who don't like Inglaba. But what they've done with their feelings and thoughts has turned them into really stunning critiques. So you have 1,000 essays about Black Panther that have been given birth to. Why can't the same happen with Inglaba? Why is the right response to my feelings of being offended, not liking the ending or what have you? Why is the conclusion of those feelings that we should in fact just ban this thing? And I wanted to ask you here, is it fair or unfair to suspect that part of what is going on here, and we saw it with The Spear, we saw it in the 90s with the debate around Disgrace, the novel, and whether it should be taught in high school, that even people who are degreed professionals often have low levels of artistic literacy in this country.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't want to just simply call it artistic literacy, because it also kind of relegates it into the elite world of those people decide what is art and what isn't, and then they decide the rules of what, how one can be literate in it. I think it should be really around visual and communication literacy, which is something that we do actually need to be bringing into schools. I think that we do need to be having all of those debates in every available public forum as robustly as we can.
Yeah.
I think it's entirely appropriate that Inglaba is getting the kind of attention that it's getting around its artistic value, around the themes that it explores, around how it uses the Xhosa custom of Ulwaluko as a backdrop, as well as a character in my reading of the film. And all of that must happen robustly.
Yes.
But it must happen in the appropriate forum along the appropriate rules. So when we are going to be making determinations of what can and can't be seen, leave that to the law to decide, and let us be guided by that in our constitutional framework. When we want to talk about its significance as a cultural reference point, as something that is important for us to discuss and debate, to reach other kinds of discussions, let's have it out on radio, on television, in the papers, in our homes, wherever we can be, but in a respectful way that is framed by our constitutional framework, which is underpinned
by
the values of equality.
You know what the irony is, and this is another reason why this case, quite frankly, an undergraduate law student can argue this case. You would not hear on Cape Talk and 702 a very earnest but hopefully enjoyable 45 minutes so far discussion about a porn film. This entire middle hour is a counterexample to the idea that the film is not complex artistically. If it wasn't complex, then we wouldn't be having a 45-minute discussion. I'm going to change tack for the last 15 minutes. We're going to take a spot break. If you have seen Inglaba, I want you to call in and tell me what you thought of the characters, the plot, the ending. What do you think of it as a work of art? Because when we get distracted by the homophobes, we actually end up not having the conversation that we should have about the artistic merits. In the same way in which when there was a stuff up with the reclassification of Good Report. Have you seen it, by the way?
Yes, I have.
It was stunning. And I thought to myself, part of the distraction around the wrongful classification of Good Report is that, in my opinion, for example, I thought the heart of that film is that it was about psychopathy. It wasn't even about inappropriate relations between a teacher and a child. And of course, you wouldn't know that if you stopped after 13 minutes of viewing, which is more or less what the classifications board did. And therefore, they couldn't evaluate the offensive scenes in the context of the entire film. And they've made a similar mistake with Inglaber. So, question. What do you think Inglaber is actually about? What did you like about it? What didn't you like? And let's talk about it just as a film. And imagine the unimaginable. Pretend we don't live in a homophobic society. There's no brouhaha about the classification. And if you still plan to see it somehow, once the case is won, then obviously spoiler alert, because we're now going to actually talk about the film on its own merits. And I'll give you a little bit of a giveaway in terms of my own interpretation. I don't even think that this film is fundamentally about circumstances. Yay! We can actually talk about the film as a work of art and just get into it. Quick ones, because lots of people are now calling in who've seen it, and we're going to talk about the artistic merits of the film, Sikwitlane. But just a first sort of comment. So for me, the setting in the Eastern Cape, the ritual, all of that was actually incidental. This film could have taken place at Grey Dane in Bromfontein. What for you is, like, if you had to say this is the central motif of the film, what was it for you as a viewer?
I think for me, what struck me the most was the whole insider-outsider narrative and how the central character of Gwanda was a ghost or a poltergeist throughout the film, both in terms of his presentation in the white that he was dressed in, but also in terms of the function he played in that space as a character, kind of upturning it both disrespectfully, if we want to read it that way, as well as in keeping with the customs and traditions as they are negotiated within that setting. So I thought that was a really interesting.
I thought Nakane was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was really, really good. Sekwutlane and I were just talking off air about the central character in Of Good Report, who doesn't utter a word, and his facial expressions, the teacher does all the work. And even the opening scene in Inglaber and the last scene when he's at the back of the truck, I actually thought that just the comportment, the facial expressions, and I know he did a lot of work there as an amateur actor. I thought that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is an excellent performance for a debut.
Yeah.
For a debut performance.
Oh, amazing.
Really. And it really did warrant all of those Best Actor nominations and films, including for Best Foreign Film.
Absolutely. Mm. Cameron, how's it?
Morning, Sylvia. How are you?
Good. Let's put aside the homophobia. What did you actually make of the film? What was it about for you? What did you like and didn't like?
Personally, you know, I think it spoke to me, you know, especially being a black man coming from Ekasi, you know, in terms of, for me, I saw it as a love story more than anything else.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, like the forbidden type of love, in terms of what you normally go through as black men, in terms of hiding our love from people, you know, especially in the end as well, where that kind of kills Gwanda. It's still telling in terms of you know, the fact that we try so hard as black people to hide our sexuality. So for me, it was a big theme around the thing. And
what did you make of that ending? I've seen the film now twice, and the first time I saw it, my boyfriend and I were debating it. Both of us didn't like the ending. I thought it was a bit quick, and the violence at the end and the cliffing that happened, I was like, where does that come from? There wasn't enough of a crescendo building up to that for me. How did you feel about it?
No, but for me, it actually made sense, because it tells the story of a text, you know, we're actually prepared to kill someone to hide our secret. You know, our secret is so deep, so great, that we can't have the whole world knowing about, you know, I love other men. So for me, it was just like, wow.
Okay.
It was a wow for me. And I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks for calling in. Much appreciated. How did you experience it? You know, there were little bits for me that it was just, it happened too quickly. So firstly, the character that you mentioned, what was his name again?
Gwanda,
who was fabulous. His confidence happened too quickly, man. So he goes from being an outsider. Now, we know what it's like. I grew up as a queen, believe it or not. And one of the ways in which you protect yourself against being taunted is you just being over the top, and it's a defense mechanism, and it's how we survive in a homophobic world. So I grant that character his ability to, as an outsider, still have confidence. But the confidence happened too quickly for me. That was the one thing. And then the ending felt quick.
I mean, I think that in terms of the development of Gwanda's confidence, we don't really have a sense of time in the film. So we can't really tell his progression in terms of how he builds familiarity with his fellow initiates, and how that, I mean, we really only see that at that point where he starts cussing back at the boys as they show each other their penises and how well the Imlibi has snipped them. And it's quite hilarious from a queer positionality, because this is, you know, the way that, you know, we are typically said and read and sometimes experience ourselves to do it. I don't know that we can really tell. What I found quite interesting, though, was that generally as a film, it didn't seek to be that, you know, grand African film or the grand South African film, the pinnacle example of what it should look like. It just wanted to be itself with all of its imperfections. And I think this is something that we should be working towards as people who appreciate culture and that we're certainly seeing as from people who are making and producing culture. I mean, like Kagiso Lediga's new film coming up, Catching Feelings. I mean, I'm really excited for that because he's known for the kinds of films which don't try to be, you know, the pinnacle of South African filmmaking, but are just themselves 100%. To be read 100%. As they are and as they are offered.
Absolutely. Kwena, hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
I'm in the intercultural marriage. I married a Xhosa woman and I'm Tswana. So I always wanted to know the aspect of this going to the mountain and why is it so significant for them. That film has helped me to understand. And I was with my wife, we went to watch the film, and she was disappointed that, is this all that they do in the mountain? You know, the way they do this and the way they keep it so high esteem. That's it. And, yeah. I would have loved if they would have introduced some element of HIV education on it and other aspects. Maybe they would do it in part two, never part two.
Yeah, we should
but
get
you see,
never part two.
This is part of what the tribunal missed. It doesn't seek to be edutainment, nor is it a documentary. You know what I mean? So it doesn't have to introduce those particular elements. Sabu says on Twitter, Eusebius, that ending left me internally conflicted. Is it a good ending? Is it a bad ending? What does it mean? Is it saying a lot without saying much? Am I overanalyzing it? Sabu, I had the same, and that's why I'm saying my experiences of the ending differ the first and the second time. The second time, I loved it. And I thought to myself, you know what? Just like your Western ear that wants a perfect cadence. Sometimes, without being pseudo-profound, it's kind of cool to have a jarring ending because life is jarring and you don't always have this fantastic cadence in life and in stories. Natasha, hello.
Good morning, Eusebius.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My opinion is, okay, I have not seen the movie, and I really do want to see the movie. And I've got a level of I would call it anger, that this movie has, that it's been given a pornography genre, if we can call it that. So I cannot go and pay at a movie house to go see this movie. But I don't know how graphic the movie is. I could pay money to go see Brokeback Mountain.
Exactly.
Which was fairly graphic.
50 Shades of Grey.
There are TV shows, Game of Thrones, which is very graphic. There was another one, something, I can't even remember, which showed an erect penis on TV. And these are shows our children have access to. But at the movie house, we can, you can stop an age group of going into a certain movie.
Absolutely.
So it sort of angers me that we've got, it feels like we banned literature and we banned movies, and it feels the same to me. And that actually angers me.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully when the reclassification gets overturned, you'll have an opportunity to see it. The one last sort of thought from me, and then I'll give you a minute to give a response to Natasha and your final thoughts. The other thing I liked, which I find so ironic, is that actually the film for me was actually quite complex in how it grappled with sexuality. It was on this show, for example, that either John Trengove, the director, or Nakana himself corrected me and reminded me that we can't even be presumptuous about the three characters' sexual orientation. There is no obvious self-identification as gay, for example.
Absolutely. And again, I mean, this is about the nuance of our humanity as people. You know, we can't come in with very blunt instruments to define what is right, what is wrong, what is moral and amoral. We need to approach people in all of their complexity. We need to approach our stories, which reflect our lives, even if they are fictions, with complexity. I mean, I think that another thing that we do need to be careful about in this whole conversation around classification of content is this thing around let's do it for the children. We will have noted that a lot of what the FPB puts out into the public around its job, its role, is around protecting the children, which is not a useful or productive way of educating us and getting us to participate in the screening of content so that we can all be exposed to age-appropriate content that we consent into, having been informed. Rather, the conversation should be less framed around the children and more framed around how do we manage conversations around sensitive topics and representations 100%. So that our kids are adequately informed and prepared for them?
Sekutlana, you've been brilliant. Thank you for coming in. But shall we let Charles have the last word? Charles tweets, Nakana isn't an amateur actor. He studied acting at AFDA. Thank you, Charles.
The Money Show, weekday evenings at 6.
Coming up on the next Money Show, we're talking to Maria Ramos, the Chief Executive Officer of ABSA. What happens when farmers default on their debts when land restitution without compensation happens? Results are from ABSA, the first of the new year, plus Warren Ingram on personal finance and Pablo Fatidis, everything to do with small business.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on Cape Talk. Your number one news and talk station. The Money Show is brought to you by